This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety. Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 85. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm Sean, and I'm joined as always by Adam. How are you doing, Adam?
Well, I can feel the springtime pollen sore throat coming, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, let's get started with the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 21.7 dog walking miles, and I blew up my knee during spin class on Monday. I survived just fine on Wednesday after adjusting my cycle shoe and taking a whole lot of Motrin, so we'll see how that shakes out.
Well, that is terrible. Sorry. Hate that for you.
That's not so bad.
Well, that's good. When I hear blew out my knee, I think bad things.
No. I said I blew it up.
Oh, okay.
I didn't blow it out. No, that's very different. No. It just hurt really bad. I had to abandon when it started to ache really bad in the class, so.
Ah, gotcha. Well, I've got one of those fitness tracking apps on my smartwatch, and apparently I've been walking a lot more at the office because it keeps telling me, hey, you've met your goal for the day, which wasn't happening before. I think that's because I've literally been chasing people down because of deadlines and stuff, but I'll take what I can get.
All right. Well, there we go. So Aaron is on assignment and will return next week.
In the meantime, check out bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. If you've never checked out the Blue Collar Prepping blog, there's some really good tips with new articles 5 days a week.
Felons behaving badly. NC gunman steals two trucks. Shoots at deputies during wild chase before crashing in pond, sheriff says.
Well, that just sounds like an awesome Friday.
Yeah. Dateline Oxford, North Carolina. A home robbery suspect carjacked a woman at gunpoint during a wild series of events that involved him shooting at deputies and stealing yet another vehicle early Saturday morning, Granville County authorities say. The gunman, who suffered a gunshot in his shoulder from deputies, was eventually caught after he crashed a second stolen vehicle into a pond, said Granville County Sheriff Brindell B. Wilkins Jr. Wilkins said it all started Saturday morning when suspect tried to break into a home on Sunset Road. As he was leaving, a neighbor who said they witnessed the break-in started following suspect in his vehicle. Suspect shot at the neighbor who was chasing him twice, which is really, really poor writing, but okay.
That's
shot
awful.
At him twice while he was chasing him, I think is what they really meant to say. The neighbors then stopped and met with a deputy who had been called. The deputy then began chasing suspect, who shot at the deputy also, Wilkins said. More poor writing.
Who is writing this?
Web staff.
Oh, yeah, we have that too. WKR and web staff.
I don't know if it actually is web staff, but that's my guess. The suspect then went down a farm road and drove the truck he was in into a creek.
This is terrible.
I'm telling you, my English teacher would kick this person right in the head. He got out and ran to a nearby home. Suspect held that resident at gunpoint and took her truck, and the chase continued, the sheriff said. As he reached a dead-end road, suspect backed out and started firing at deputies, according to officials. They returned fire, and suspect was hit in the shoulder. Despite being shot, suspect then drove through the woods to another road, ditched the truck, and went to his girlfriend's house and got her to take him to Highway 49 and was dropped off there, Sheriff Wilkins said. The suspect then stole another truck and the chase continued, again. During this chase, suspect drove that truck into a pond and jumped out, running to a nearby convenience store, officials said. The man hid in a garage at the store, where he was finally captured. No deputies were injured during the incident. Suspect has numerous charges pending in Granville and Person County, Sheriff Wilkins said. He is currently being held in the Person County Jail.
Well, now that that's over with.
So, imagine that this person is probably, you know, your ordinary average run-of-the-mill person who just didn't feel like stopping for the police that day, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of us have, like, ran from the cops every right, now you and know, then,
just
right?
snapped suddenly.
Yeah. I mean, it just happens.
Bad judgment, you know, could happen to anybody.
Right.
Non-support. I'm guessing that means he's a deadbeat dad. Non-support, misdemeanor class 2. Driver's license revoked, misdemeanor class 1. Safe cracking, safe robbery, felon class I. Receiving stolen goods, felon class H. 9 counts, felony breaking and entering, felon class H. 5 counts, larceny after breaking and entering, felon class H. 2 counts, larceny, felon class H. And 1 count of larceny over $200, felon class H. So, yeah, probably not just an innocent bystander.
No.
Don't think he just snapped.
No.
Nikki has taken a whack at all of the Dems' foreign policy, including Donald Trump's. So what about my preferred candidate, Ted Cruz? Nikki, it's time to look at Ted Cruz. You talked about everyone else aside from Bernie Sanders. So how about it? Is Ted Cruz's foreign policy realistic?
Well, the reason I haven't talked about Bernie's foreign policy is because it's somewhat nuts. Remember the whole Putin is regretting invading Crimea bit?
Yeah, that was special.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to bother with that one. Cruz, he's a bit more interesting.
So you said last week that you liked the fact that his foreign policy team is diverse in their views. Can you remind us what you meant?
Sure. Ted Cruz assembled a bunch of foreign policy experts whose views range from the "we are at war with Islam because it wants to impose Sharia law on us" garble, garble, derp, derp, to the more moderate "Islam is not all one thing" view and acknowledging that moderate Muslims can be effective allies against the nuts. He's also got a couple of former intelligence officers, as well as a former Special Forces NCO who happens to be a friend of mine who's on the team. It's a diverse conglomeration of views indicating that Cruz is willing to listen and make up his mind after hearing all sides of an issue. That's reassuring. And frankly, the leftist rags are literally soiling themselves with froth-flecked zeal, calling his foreign policy team everything from crazy to fanatical to terrifying, which makes me giggle. But this is supposed to be foreign policy for grown-ups, right? So I'll behave.
Okay, so what about his foreign policy views?
Well, let's start with Israel. Ted Cruz says that we will stand unapologetically with the nation of Israel. Okay, I understand Israel is the only democracy in the sea of Middle Eastern authoritarianism. I get that we need to have an ally in the region. And Israel-U.S. relations have been historically complex, requiring much more time than we have here to discuss. I will say, however, that considering how often we've used our veto power in the UN Security Council in Israel's favor and how much aid, both military and otherwise, we provide to the Israelis, the constant espionage in which Israel engages against the United States is pretty egregious and, frankly, it's getting old.
Wasn't Jonathan Pollard, the naval intelligence officer caught spying for Israel, just released recently?
Yep, back in November, after 30 years. And as far as I'm concerned, he should have remained there to rot. The damage he inflicted on U.S. national security is unparalleled. So if we're going to remain a stalwart friend to Israel, we should expect at the very least that they respect our national security and our classified information enough and stop sending agents here for both industrial and military espionage. Cruz strongly opposes the Iran deal as well. And we've discussed that deal in previous shows, so I won't go into it too much here. There's definitely issues with that deal, including the fact that billions of dollars frozen under sanctions will be released, so Iran can continue supporting such scumbags as the Houthis in Yemen and Assad in Syria. As many other Republicans, Cruz says he will also rebuild the military, because Obama has somehow decimated the military. We do have to look at both sides of the issue here. It's true that defense spending under Obama has been dropping from 2012 on. Spending on national defense made up 20.1% of the federal budget in 2010, but in 2015, it was 15.9%. Over the same time period, spending fell from 4.6% of gross domestic product to 3.3%. But we also have to remember that we withdrew the majority of our combat troops from Afghanistan during that time period. So the spending drop includes the fact that we aren't using as much for actual military action. And sequestration, which imposed across-the-board cuts to federal programs, was an agreement between both Republicans and Democrats, so it's hard to place that blame solely on Obama. I would submit that our military doesn't need rebuilding as much as it needs some fundamental changes in training and rules of engagement. Obama criticized Ted Cruz recently for recommending U.S. Muslim communities be monitored for radicalization. As much as Obama doesn't want to admit it because it's somehow not American, radicalization is a huge problem, probably more so than the odd terrorist hiding among hordes of Middle Eastern refugees who enter this country. Remember, the San Bernardino terrorist was born and radicalized here. So was Nidal Hassan, the Army psychiatrist who committed mass murder at Fort Hood. Al-Qaeda spokes scum Adam Gadan was born here. The 9/11 mosque here in Virginia propelled radical imams to notoriety. One of them, Muhammad Al-Hanout, was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Another one, Anwar al-Awlaki, remember that one? Had links to the 9/11 terrorists, as well as inspired the Fort Hood shooter and radicalized others until an American drone strike turned him into a pile of slimy little pieces. Another terrorist who taught at this mosque and was a camp counselor there was charged by U.S. prosecutors with plotting with members of Al-Qaeda to assassinate President George W. Bush. Another mosque, apparently at the center of the San Bernardino attack, had a cleric who was found to have had repeated contact with terrorist Syed Farouk, after having furiously denied that he even knew the guy. So I don't think keeping an extra vigilant watch on certain mosques and sophisticated ISIS recruitment tools on the internet is all that unreasonable. In response to the recent terrorist attacks in Brussels, Ted Cruz called for the U.S. government to stop accepting refugees from countries with a significant Al-Qaeda or ISIS presence and to empower law enforcement to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. The first part of this call is a bit, common sense until we are able to actually vet the refugees coming into this country is kind of incongruous in the discussion about the current terrorist attack. The brothers who committed the attack were born in Brussels and radicalized there. The mastermind behind the Paris attacks was also a Belgian citizen. So again, we need to worry about who is getting radicalized here and in the West, which makes the second part of Cruz's statement make a little more sense. Overall, Cruz's foreign policy strikes me as emotional but balanced, and maybe tempered by varied views. He is very emotional when it comes to issues of Cuba, which makes sense given his father's background. It's kind of like me with Russia. Given my background as a refugee from the Soviet Union, I admit to having certain biases when it comes to Russia. That said, I know the biases exist. So I do try to temper my views by ensuring that I get dissenting views on the issue. I think that Cruz's diverse national security team will help him temper and balance his emotionalist rhetoric as well.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plug of the week.
So, several years ago, when I was still blogging with Linoge at wallsofthecity.net, I bought a 5.11 tactical 1.5-inch leather casual belt. It was a long time ago. It looked really nice. I used it for work, and it was also, you know, a gun belt. Because as gunnies know, you need to use a gun belt, not a belt that you pick off the rack at Target.
Yes.
It's very, very important for you to get a good belt and a good holster. I'm just talking to the people who maybe just started listening, but I think by the time you start listening to this show, you're already like so far down the gunny rabbit hole that you probably already know that.
It's possible that you don't know that, but if you don't know that, get a gun belt, spend the money.
Yeah, get a gun belt.
It's a bit like building a house on a pile of sand.
Yes.
If you try to carry a gun on a belt that is not a gun belt, it is a bit like building a house on a pile of sand. Get a decent belt.
Right. We also call that floppy holster syndrome.
Yes. It doesn't matter how good your holster is. If you got it on a crappy belt.
Yep. It'll just flop around and...
And the best thing about a good belt is it doesn't matter how many stupid holsters you buy because you're going to buy a bunch. The belt is always going to be good. And unless you get so fat, it doesn't work anymore. And that's your problem. There's nothing you can do about it. Well, there's nothing I can do about that. There's plenty you can do about that.
Right. So I had that belt. That first one for probably 2.5 or 3 years. I mean, it lasted a really long time. And then it started kind of falling apart or whatever. So I went and bought another. I just got on Amazon and bought another 511 casual leather belt. Only this time, when I got it, it looked like it was made out of Kydex. It did not look like a leather belt at all, like in any way, shape, or form. It looked plastic from 20 feet away. Now, I am somewhat of a professional, right? At that time, I think I was even wearing suits to work. I could not wear that belt to work.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, I called Evil Robot, Michael, who is the husband of Jennifer from In Jennifer's Head, who we talk about all the time.
Right.
And I said, hey, so I've got this 511 belt and I really like it. So it's got this one feature where there's like a handcuff key holder right at the small of your back. And that's just very like James Bond to me. And I was like, hey, so I need a new belt. You're a custom belt maker. Can you make me one of these? And he did. And I kept that belt for about 3 or 3.5 years. And then recently it started showing signs of wear and whatnot. And I emailed Michael and I asked him to make me another one. But Michael, if you're listening to this, you never responded.
Actually, I was talking to them and they're not really making much anymore right now.
I figured that was probably what was going on. So I decided to just take a chance and buy another 511 belt because they are not terribly expensive.
As gun belts go, that's a screaming deal at $50.
Yes.
And I know right now everybody's like, who's never bought a gun belt before is going, oh my goodness, $50
for a belt. But I get this one at Target for like $8.99.
Yes, and it's worth all of $8.99.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
So I bought it. I was like, eh, YOLO. Got it in, and this one actually is back to looking nice. So for a while there, I had kind of sworn off 511 stuff because I, you know, bought stuff about 8 years ago, and then I bought stuff again like 3 or 4 years ago, and it didn't really work out. The quality wasn't there. But this belt, I've been wearing it for about a month now, and it's back up to the high standard that Michael Evil Robot set for me. So if you don't have a gun belt, go buy this one. The link is in the show notes.
We've all seen it. The new girl at the range in all the wrong clothing. About to learn the hard way that date clothes and range clothes are not the same clothes. So what should you wear? In her Pacifiers and Peacemaker segment, Beth tells you ladies how to dress to avoid doing the hot brass dance, as well as avoid a bunch of other problems I never even considered, because I'm a guy, and it wouldn't have crossed my mind to warn you not to do these things. Beth, I went to the range recently and I saw a guy there who had his girlfriend with him for her first trip to the gun range. And I could tell it was her first trip because of what she was wearing.
Oh yeah, I see a lot more women at the range nowadays, which is very exciting, but every once in a while, I get a little concerned when I spot a female in some clothing that's just not at all that great for shooting. Of course, it's really no surprise that women and men dress differently, most of the time anyway. Women are shaped differently, we like different things, and frankly, we have a lot of different opinions and options. Women certainly like to be comfortable too, but we do love to wear that pop of color, some fun patterns, a variety of materials, coordinating layers, and a lot of accessories. Nevertheless, some of these fashion preferences can be distracting or even dangerous while shooting. So beyond the basic protective eyes and ears, there are a few tips and considerations for women for what to wear and what not to wear at the range. So listen up. First of all, shoes. For training, pumps are just not a good idea. Now, I realize that there's always that possibility that a woman may be involved in a threatening situation while wearing those Jimmy Choo slingback wedges, but let's keep them in the closet when we go to the firing range. And keep the peep toes, flip-flops, and sandals at home too. Take your training seriously and hopefully you can avoid serious injury. No one wants to see someone twist an ankle because she's tripped on some spent cartridges or panic because some hot brass has landed on the top of an exposed foot. Now the next thing is clothing. Speaking of spent cartridges, watch out for those. And please wear something that won't inadvertently act as a catching mitt for metal debris. It burns. You know that baby blue camisole and sheer kimono-sleeved shrug, they're perfect for grabbing a business lunch, but they leave way too much skin exposed for the range. And when the casing ejects from a semi-automatic, it may just land on you and sear that delicate bare skin. It's happened to me, and I have the odd-shaped burn marks to prove it. So cover and protect what skin you can with shooting-friendly attire. Maybe a high-neck t-shirt, long sleeves, and don't wear anything too loose either. Your clothes can easily get in the way of movement, like holstering or reholstering your gun. Or worse, those cartridges can get trapped in the folds of your clothing. Now, hats. Here's another thing. I am not a big fan of baseball caps. I think they look weird on me, and many gals just don't really want to fight with that hat hair. But a hat can help with that ejected casing problem, and they can add extra levels of protection for your face and your eyes. I know I have spent brass bouncing off my head all the time, so hats are good for keeping that at bay. Also, they're great for corralling that loose hair, so consider wearing a hat, or at least bring a headband or a hair tie to keep the stray hair out of your face. Now, outerwear. Here's another really great suggestion for ladies. Bring a jacket, or maybe a simple shirt, or some kind of light coat. Besides being good for covering that exposed skin and protecting your arms from hot fragments and debris, a jacket is also good for some weather control. The outdoor range may be an invitation for sunburn or hypothermia, and I've never found the indoor range to offer ideal temperatures either. So if you pack that light jacket, you can remedy the chills you can use in case of sunburn or brass burn, and you can also take it off if you get too hot or maybe you're just done shooting. This is actually a great idea as well because you can minimize lead exposure. You can take off that jacket, leave it in the trunk, or store it somewhere until you can get it into the washing machine. And watch out for any pockets. Those hot pieces of metal can easily turn into unwelcome hitchhikers. And you don't want to forget that they're there if you have to, say, head to the airport or something. I can guarantee they won't really enjoy that you have a spent casing in your pocket while you're trying to board the next plane. Then we also have to consider about accessories. I know women love jewelry, but you really need to be careful. Dangles and bangles, they can get in the way, whether they're on your ears, around your neck, or circling your wrist. As well, the sentimental or expensive items have the possibility of being ruined or damaged by hot debris or toxic gases emitted while you're shooting. You may want to be comfortable and fashionable while you shoot, but you don't need to worry about your infinity necklace breaking in half or the gold hoop earring flinging off down the shooting lane. And I've actually had that happen to me before. My ear protection got caught up in my earring, and as I removed the muffs, the earring went flying down toward the target, landing in the middle of a pile of brass. Needless to say, we left it there until I got a broom and safely swept it back toward me when the shooting had ended, but still it was kind of embarrassing, and I don't want that to happen to anybody if possible. The next and final thing, ladies, consider makeup. Yes, believe it or not, makeup can make a difference at the shooting range, and it has nothing to do with impressing a date or looking amazing underneath the fluorescent lighting or the blazing sun, for that matter. If you're outdoors, be sure to slather on the sunscreen first, but indoors or not, do not slather on the foundation. Too much makeup can actually trap those fine lead particles and gases against your skin, which can result in breakouts or irritation. And since you may get a bit sweaty, consider that makeup melt and your desire not to experience that runny mess at the shooting range. You may be too tempted to dab at your face to wipe off the sweat, and at that point, you're just spreading dirt and grime and lead all over the place. That's not a good idea. So in this case, less is more. All in all, training should be a fun, safe, and rewarding experience for everyone involved. So please be careful with what you wear at the range. And don't let any gun fashion faux pas or any malfunction, wardrobe, or firearm keep you from enjoying your time at the range.
All right, Beth. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
Thanks very much. Stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
Fun with headlines.
Oh, WKRN web staff. So I saw this the other day and my first reaction to the headline was, wow, I didn't know the Kennedys came this far south.
Yeah.
Man leaves truck, girlfriend behind after rolling into Hermitage Ravine.
What a jerk, man.
Yes.
Flipped his truck into a ravine, left the truck and the girlfriend behind as he bailed.
Yes, that is what the headline says. Here's the story. A man rolled his truck in Hermitage Sunday night, allegedly leaving the truck and running from police. Police told News 2 the driver appeared to have been backing out of a driveway when he rolled into a ravine on Rachel's Place just off Jackson Parkway. Witnesses on scene said they saw him crawl out of the truck and run away. Police have not located him at this time, but say they know his identity. Witnesses say the man's girlfriend went to check on him when she slipped and hurt her leg. She went to the hospital, but is expected to be okay.
So she wasn't in the truck at the time?
No. And apparently, like, he ran off and then she went to go check to see where he was. So he probably didn't even know that she was there. Now, in the defense of WKR and Webstaff, or more likely whoever pays WKR and Webstaff, they have actually changed the headline in the article to say, man leaves truck behind after rolling into Hermitage Ravine. But you can still see it in the URL.
Yeah, so the editor came behind him and went,
whoa, 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 what is this?
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
The editor came by and said, this is so going to end up on Fun with Headlines, you idiots.
And they also now have a picture. They didn't have a picture when I first looked at this.
It's down in that ravine, isn't it?
It is. It's a very interesting picture. It's like, how does that even happen?
Aside from CB radios, I thought police and fire scanners were the most basic type of radio receiver there was. Used to be so, but Sig points out that in our modern age, it just isn't so anymore. Hold on as he explains the complicated world of public service radio in
Tech Tips,
Tech Tips, Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips
with Silicon Greybeard.
Well, hey Sig, last time you said we're going to get into scanning. I had a friend years ago who had one of those Bearcat scanners, and he'd listen to the cops. Is that what you mean?
Right. Listening to the local police, fire rescue, and ambulances has always been a popular use for scanners, and it used to be pretty easy. Guys would share the local frequencies or just let their scanners find the empty frequencies and save them in memory. There were even books of frequencies. Then came trunking. Before trunking, a police department would have some number of radio channels, and each car or couple of officers would be assigned a radio that worked on one of those channels. It was pretty much a bunch of radios all tuned to separate frequencies, and the dispatchers worked kind of like switchboard operators in the old movies. For the scanner listener, it was easy, though, because all they had to do was tune into one of those channels, and they'd hear the police and the dispatcher throughout an entire call. As police departments got bigger, the spectrum kept getting harder to manage. Not only were bigger cities running out of radio channels, adjacent cities or counties would interfere with each other. Something had to be done, so the first thing they tried was to use sub-audible tones. These were called PL for private line, and more than one radio could use the same frequency as long as they had different PL tones. They don't really have a private radio frequency assigned only to them, but it was like a virtual private channel. The radios could still interfere with each other if a nearby radio transmitted on the same channel that another was listening to. But it helped keep the number of channels down, and it helped keep adjacent cities from interfering with each other. So this kind of worked for a little while. But then the continuing need for more frequencies led to the idea of trunking. It required all new radios, and it was a big expense, but it greatly increased the communications for these services. There are a couple of systems in use, but an easy one to understand is the control channel idea used by Motorola and a system called EDAX. That was originally invented by GE, but after swapping hands several times, it's currently owned by Harris Corporation. Let's say friendly officer Bob needs to use the radio. He picks up the radio and hits the push-to-talk button, sending a request for channel to the control system. While he has a button pushed, the radio goes back into receive mode without him knowing it. The central computer on that control channel then searches for an unused radio channel pair and sends that channel grant information out on the control channel. This information tells all the radios on the system, if you're listening or monitoring for communications on the police group, change to channel pair XX on the system for a communication. This takes place in milliseconds, much less time than it took for me to describe this. Now, let's say Officer Bob has a question for the dispatcher or another officer's. Some systems will assign him a different channel every time they transmit. So if he needs to transmit, say, four times in a conversation, he could be on four different channels. Some systems will assign a channel and leave him there for some time. The benefit to the police department is they get frequency reuse. With the old systems, Officer Bob would have a radio channel dedicated to him, even though it wouldn't be used for most of his shift. With the trunking system, that channel gets reassigned when Bob isn't using it so that other officers can. The smart radio system does all the channel assignments so that from the officer's standpoint, it's just as easy to use. Plus, they get even more frequency reuse by assigning talk groups. Now, these are a virtual private line like the PL systems gives. They get more frequency reuse by using talk groups, and everyone that's in a talk group will hear everything for that talk group, but other groups won't, even if they're using the same radio channel. For the scanner listener, though, this is a problem. A listener can find any one of these channels, but unlike the old systems, they won't necessarily be able to hear everything going on during a police call or some other sort of event. What's needed is some way of tracking the conversation so that you can hear an entire call. Imagine a big event on the scale of one of the big shootouts or anything that lasts hours, and trying to make sense of hundreds of fragmented conversations on one channel. It's hard enough with a handful of conversations, let alone hundreds. Since all the communications we talked about are over the open radio, there's no reason why a scanner couldn't be programmed to follow the control system's instructions too, and scanner manufacturers have been offering them for years. There's a bit of a gotcha though, because there are several trunking systems and you need to know what's being used in your area to choose one. There are four major systems in use in the U.S. In addition to the Motorola and EDAC systems we already mentioned, there's a system called P25 or Project 25 and another called LTR. The county I live in is transitioning from EDACs to P25. So if I had bought a dedicated EDACs-only scanner, I'd have to buy a P25 scanner now. Since about the late 90s, though, most digital scanners will decode both, and many will decode everything. But the biggest gotcha is that none of the radios we've talked about so far are trunk trackers. To a broadband receiver like the Alinco we talked about a couple of weeks ago, many of these digital channels will just sound like annoying noise. If you're going to want to listen to this, it's another radio. Finally, you might wonder why you'd listen to these services. What's the appeal? For many listeners, it's being able to hear local news unfiltered. Now, much of what you'll hear is pretty trivial, and it'll never make the news. How the police deal with a vagrant or a minor disturbance like a couple of drunks fighting outside a bar. But you'll hear the police unfiltered. Do they sound compassionate or rude? Or are they just plain working? You'll hear routine traffic accidents and ambulance calls. In the event of a disaster situation, a hurricane, wildfire, tornado, or whatever form of disaster you have in your area, it can keep you aware of what's going on and increase your situational or tactical awareness. Are there civil disturbances going on? Is it heading your way? For other listeners, though, they consider it a civic responsibility to know what their police are doing and how they come across while doing it. It could certainly influence your vote for the chief of police or your county sheriff. I have no doubt that if the military was in your area, that they'd have ways to communicate that are well beyond the ability of these scanners to follow and decrypt. So don't count on a scanner to be able to listen to everything. Sean, that wraps up this series on receivers. I'm not saying anyone needs to go buy anything, let alone one of everything. But I hope if there's interest out there that folks will find this helpful. Most importantly, I hope it keeps anyone from buying the wrong thing.
All right, Sig. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next time.
You can read more from Silicon Greybeard at thesilicongraybeard.blogspot.com. That's Greybeard spelled G-R-A-Y-B-E-A-R-D. Or email questions directly to sigraybeard, one word, at gmail.com.
The J-Block. So I got an email from Weird that there's now an anti-gun podcast.
And Weird was the very first subscriber. And now you're the second subscriber, or maybe the second listener.
I think I was actually the first listener because Weird was doing something. I had to email her to say, is this on iTunes yet? Oh, it just came through. It's now on iTunes.
So you've actually corresponded with this person now?
Yes, I have.
What? Honey, I've got a fan.
Well, sort of.
Maybe.
I was honest when I sent the second email that said all your information is totally wrong and here's why. And I run a podcast, and it's a pro-gun podcast, so I mean, I'm not lying to the lady. It's called Loaded Conversations. I guess it was a matter of time. There's like 40 bazillion gun podcasts, so eventually there has to be at least one anti-gunner doing an anti-gun podcast. I got to admit, it's a bit like an anti-gun range. I mean, like, there's no there.
Right.
You know, what do you talk about? I don't like guns. I'm scared. It's right about what you'd think. Emotionalism. Getting all the facts wrong. The observer effect in full effect. You know what the observer effect is, right? It's like you buy yourself one of those, what's that funky looking Toyota?
FJ Cruiser?
Yes, the funky FJ Cruiser thing, right? You go and you're like, oh, I'd really like an FJ Cruiser. Linoge has an FJ Cruiser.
Right.
And I'm like, I would totally like to have an FJ Cruiser. It looks like a cool car, right? I wonder how many of those things there are. And then you just start seeing FJ Cruisers everywhere when you never noticed them before. And suddenly everybody has an FJ Cruiser.
I'm doing that with a Lexus SUV right now.
Right. Right. All of a sudden, like, there's FJ Cruisers everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Check this out. She is surprised that people in Ohio carry guns.
I was shocked also to find out that my state permitted people to walk around with concealed firearms on their person. I know, I've lived a sheltered life. But perhaps most disturbing of all, our new house turned out to be just around the corner from a gun store. An actual store that sold actual guns. Right there in broad daylight, you could buy a gun. The icing on the cake for me was its name, Gun Envy. I will probably talk about that quite a bit.
In broad daylight.
I don't know about you, Sean, but around here, most of the gun shops close like at 7 at the latest.
Because they have families they go home to.
Yeah, I mean, there's not like
normal hours.
So Walmart sells guns, right? I mean, they used to. I don't know if they still do.
Sure.
But the gun counter isn't open after like 6:30 or 7. You can't go in to a 24-hour Walmart at 2 o'clock in the morning and buy a gun. You just can't.
I don't know. I've never tried. They never have anything in Walmart that I want to buy.
Well, I mean, there's that. But still, she says like, oh my gosh, they're selling them in broad daylight. Well, yes.
In broad daylight?
Why are you shocked?
No, not in broad daylight. When else would they be selling it? Is this the sort of thing that's supposed to only happen in dark alleys out of people's trunks?
Well, yeah. Because, you know, gun show loophole.
Apparently. I mean, at several points in the two episodes, she says that no one she knew in her former state of Massachusetts carried a gun, except for a cop.
Although I had lived before in Houston and Washington, D.C., the only person I'd ever known to pack heat was, in fact, a cop. And he sure didn't go around talking about it. In rural Massachusetts, nobody had a gun for personal protection. Not that I knew of, anyway.
So, okay. So I've got all my anti-gun talking points bingo card, packing heat. So I'm checking that off.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That's the only time you ever hear that.
Oh, I suspect that most gun owners in Massachusetts are not going to tell her about their carry guns.
I got to tell you, I wouldn't tell anyone in Massachusetts that I even owned a gun. After hearing some of the stuff that JG talked about when he left.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
So I think it was on the Squirrel Report where he said that like one of his coworkers said, I'm glad you're leaving now that I know you're one of those people.
Because he was going to go work for the NRA and he told people that he was going to work for the NRA.
Yes. And then I want to say that his boss or somebody else said, thank you for never causing a gun incident at work. And he'd worked there for like over a decade, maybe?
Oh, like, because he has a gun, so he would cause an incident?
Right, right. You know, he has a gun, so, you know, they're glad that he didn't, you know, bring the gun to work and shoot everybody.
Not only would I not tell her I owned a gun, I would stay as far away from her as possible. She sounds like she's permanently on the verge of a panic attack. You've got to listen to these podcasts. There's two episodes so far. They're 15 and 18 minutes long. Now, she used to work for an NPR station, and it shows. As John Richardson of No Lawyers, Only Guns and Money commented, it sounds like Ira Glass's This American Life, but with an overdose of stupidity and vocal fry. And, honey, the town you used to live in back in Massachusetts, it may not have had a gun store, but it was home to Yankee Hill Machine.
Oh my God, you are kidding me.
They built AR-15 parts and silencers. Don't you have one of them?
I am wearing a Yankee Hill silencer t-shirt right now. I literally am wearing that t-shirt right now.
Yeah. There were plenty of people around you carrying guns. They just weren't telling you about it. And our sponsor, Andrew Branca, lifelong Massachusetts resident, has had an unrestricted carry permit in the state of Massachusetts for 25 years. They're not that hard to come by. Weird has one. So, guess what? There were plenty of people around you who were carrying guns in Massachusetts.
And guess what? In Massachusetts, they could carry them in a lot more places than they can carry them in Ohio.
So speaking of our sponsor, Law of Self-Defense's attorney Andrew Branca, I was talking to him about his future plans. Andrew's been working 7-day weeks for something like 3 years now, and he's looking to slow down. He said he'd like to spend a little bit more time with his family and a little bit less time traveling. So to make that happen, he's going to be doing some bigger Law of Self-Defense seminars in better facilities. Now, Adam, you took the class in the Nashville Armory, right?
Yes.
Now, would you say that that's a nice place, a good place, or just sort of a middle of the road place?
Well, Alex from the Firearm Blog called it the finest range he'd ever set foot in, and he's been to a lot more ranges than me, so I'm going to go with yes, it's a nice place.
We just had a new high-end gun range open up here in Raleigh. It's called the Triangle Shooting Academy, and these are the sort of places that Andrew's looking to teach his state-specific law of self-defense seminars in. TSA has room for up to 75 people in their classes, plus they have a simulator. So Andrew has just announced that he's coming back to the Raleigh area to teach his Law of Self-Defense seminar there. The class is August 7th, and it'll cost you $150. Adam, you went to the Law of Self-Defense class pretty well versed in Tennessee law. Would you say you got your money's worth out of the class?
Yes, absolutely.
I know I did too, and I thought I knew everything there was to know about North Carolina self-defense law. I was involved in helping write it and lobbying to help get it passed.
So I'm also like the local concealed carry accountant, as Say Uncle likes to say, so I thought I knew it all too. And like you, I was involved in getting some of these laws passed. So there are a couple of times where I wanted to correct Andrew, but then the next slide was the case law that I hadn't even considered.
Yeah.
Whoops.
And it was a pretty good thing you didn't say anything, right?
Yeah, I've learned my lesson to keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go to this class and you're going to find out a lot of detail about what the law actually says, what the legal opinions are, what the jury instructions are, all of that stuff. Not just what the black and white law is, but all of the stuff that goes into it.
Yeah, because you can read the law, but you have to look at it how it's applied. And that is where the difference is.
Yep. You got to find out how the rubber meets the road.
Yes.
Because who's going to get squished?
Right.
I'm looking at Andrew's class schedule right now, and he's got 6 classes scheduled so far this year. If you live in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, and you're pretty quick, you can get into his April 9th class at Patriot Firearms School in Rehoboth, Massachusetts.
Then there's the class on August 7th down in Raleigh at Triangle Shooting Academy.
On August 13th, Andrew's in Sherwood, Oregon, teaching Oregon and Washington specific law of self-defense at Threat Dynamics.
And on August 20th, he's back in my hometown of Nashville at the Nashville Armory, teaching Tennessee and Kentucky laws of self-defense.
On October 15th, Andrew's in Glendale, Arizona, teaching Arizona-specific law of self-defense.
And then the next day, October 16th, he's in Las Cruces, New Mexico, at the Butterfield Shooting Range, teaching New Mexico and Texas law.
Keep an eye on his website for more classes, or email him and ask him to teach a class in your area.
But most importantly, when you sign up, make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to save 10%.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly, and a little help from you is a big help to us.
Right after Andy Parker's daughter, Allison, was murdered on camera during a televised interview, you couldn't avoid seeing Andy's face everywhere. He tried to make himself the public face of gun control. Last week, Weird took a segment from CBS's anti-gun Guns in America show with the alchemist Colin Goddard. This week, it's Andy and Barbara Parker who get their turn in the patented Weird Audio Fisk in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
So from the same Guns in America special from CBS, we have these anti-gunners.
I'm Andy Parker, and when my daughter Allison was murdered on live television, I pledged that I was going to do whatever it takes to reduce gun violence in this country.
You should remember the story, and you've probably heard of Andy Parker before.
Like parents that of other shooting victims, the Parkers immediately changed the course of their lives, grief fueling fury.
Like some other parents of shooting victims. As I said last week, this show interviewed Sandy Frohman as well as Lynn Russell and Chuck DeCaro, victims of violent crime who became pro-gun advocates. When I did my long stint on the CNN Obama town hall, I covered Kimberly Corbin and Taya Kyle, also pro-gun activists who experienced horrible tragedy. But all of this is cherry-picking around the truth. You see, most people who have experienced tragedy simply grieve and heal, and don't seek the limelight of activism. But what of Andy Parker? He was a Democrat politician long before the murder, and while I can't find anything from his failed political aspirations, I suspect he was anti-gun before the shooting. Same goes with last week's subject, Colin Goddard. Funny how Colin got a job after the shooting with the Brady campaign, while his father had been an active member of Brady and the Million Mom March for years before. I'm sorry, but these tragic events don't turn people anti-gun. They give anti-gun people a soapbox to stand on and blood to dance in.
What changes do you want to see?
Well, the simple thing is just universal background checks and closing the loopholes in these gun shows. That's the simple stuff.
Even CBS isn't willing to play along with this bait and switch.
But the sad fact is that did pass a background check and bought his weapon legally.
And how does Andy field this one?
There are people that say, well, nothing would have prevented her death. Okay, maybe so. But is that a reason to not try and save the next life, even if it's one life?
There it is. No, nothing would have saved her life. She was in complete condition white when that camera was rolling, and she needed to be to conduct a professional interview. But Andy doubles down, saying that the garbage boilerplate laws might save the next life. And then makes the colossal mistake of saying, even if it's just one life. This argument is always flawed when it comes to guns, because if taken honestly, it argues that gun owners are brash idiots. We own and carry guns, but all they can do is cause accidents and murders. No, gun ownership is up, violent crime is down. His argument doesn't take into account people who are alive today only because they had the means to defend themselves. They had two on this very show, Lynn Russell and Chuck DeCaro. Saving one life so you can kill two isn't a convincing argument. And what about the killer?
The gunman turned out to be someone the victims knew. He was a troubled former station employee, who had been fired in 2013. Before taking his own life later that day, he released a 23-page letter claiming that he had been motivated by other mass shootings.
A killer motivated by mass killers to get all the news attention. And note, we had to bleep this jerk's name out of this show because he's still getting the fame he wanted months after this heinous act. Obviously, the problem here is guns.
The Parkers insist they're not taking aim at gun ownership, but at the NRA, which they say has stifled any discussion about regulations.
The NRA stifled discussion? More like we had the discussion. We've made our decision, and once again, the answer is no. Why can't people like Andy Parker just accept that? America doesn't want your pointless regulation, Andy.
I'm just going to put it out there. I think there are a lot of people who think you both are on this quixotic mission, well-intentioned, but doomed to fail.
We're on a mission. I don't think it's quixotic, and I don't think we're going to fail.
We've seen this become a national conversation. Whereas even a couple of years ago, no one would talk about it. But now people are all discussing it and telling us what you're doing is important.
Note the people who are saying what you're doing is important are all named Michael Bloomberg. And we weren't talking about gun control a couple of years ago? Maybe before the 1994 assault weapons ban. But after that, we've been talking and you don't like what we're saying, so you won't listen. Sorry, guys, but you are being quixotic, and you will lose. So they end the story on a passive-aggressive note. They switch back to Allison Parker's boyfriend and ask him what he thinks about how poor, poor Andy and Barbara Parker are being treated thanks to their gun-banning crusade.
What happens, though, to people like Andy and Barbara when they try to become activists?
They become targets. But we don't have any fear. We really feel like she's guiding us, and we're just following her lead.
I'm sorry, they became targets? Their daughter was killed by a crazy person who passed a criminal background check with a gun that was acquired legally, and all legal gun owners now need to pay for that? They aren't being targeted. We are. And notice that Colin Goddard and the Parker family, both on the payroll of Michael Bloomberg Incorporated, want the same thing. The same things the antis have been clamoring about for decades. All I see is blood dancing and fantasies of gun bans.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. Adam, why don't you go first this week?
When somebody says, oh, you don't want to pay for somebody else's, insert whatever here, that means you want to ban it.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. If I don't want to subsidize condoms for heroin addicts, that means I want to ban heroin addicts from using condoms.
You want them all to get pregnant.
What?
And AIDS.
What? And also...
racist.
Right, and also racist. If I don't want to fund Planned Parenthood, that means I want to ban abortions.
Exactly.
No, I just don't want to pay for them. Same thing with over-the-counter birth control, right? You know, if I don't want to subsidize that, then that means I want to ban birth control. And they actually do use that argument.
Well, what's really interesting is that the people who argue against over-the-counter birth control come in two flavors. One, the really crazy religious whack jobs who think that there should be no birth control at all because you should have to have a child if you're having sex. That should be the natural consequence of having sex is having a child. And like 95% of the people just look at them and like, are you serious? And the other people who argue against it are those people who think that it should be paid for by your healthcare provider, whoever that happens to be, usually your employer, but if not your employer, then the government. And if it's over the counter, that means you have to pay for it yourself, and that's terrible.
Yes, it's awful. Awful. You might have to spend $5 every 2 months.
Yeah.
What's funny here is that I have to buy all my own guns with my money. I don't get a subsidy. In fact, we actually have to pay more in taxes, sales tax, on firearms. So it's kind of the opposite.
Well, we pay a sales tax, and we also pay
the Pittman-Robinson.
Pittman-Robinson, is that what it's called?
It's a 10%. It's like a 10% excise tax.
The 10 or 15. Act. Depends on what it is. Like handguns, yeah. It's a smaller amount because it's rifles. Rifles are considered hunting weapons, so there's a higher excise tax on that because that subsidizes hunting more, where handguns don't.
Right.
Because it's considered to be for hunting and that sort of thing, for outdoor stuff.
Right. And now, you don't see that on your receipt because it's actually charged to the manufacturers as they manufacture the weapons. Oh, and by the way, they have to pay that biweekly, whether or not they sell the gun or not.
What I would like to know is I'm starting to see more and more of that money be used for ranges. I'd like to see more of it done that way, but we're seeing that being done in rural areas. I'd like to see more of that done in areas that are accessible to urban people. People live in larger urban centers so that they can shoot, because what did the Supreme Court say? If you can't practice, you can't be well regulated.
This is true.
What they basically said about Chicago?
When we argue against that excise tax, are we saying we want to ban ranges?
I'm not actually arguing against the excise tax. I'd just like to see more of it, more of that money come towards the type of shooting that I do and less of it go towards more deer.
That means you want to ban hunting.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That means you want to ban hunting. See? Yeah. See?
There's always somebody getting their ox gored.
It's logic or
lack of. Yeah.
So how about you, Sean?
Well, I found out that Republicans are fascists again.
Oh, well, that never changes.
And that's true, but it's a new version of Republicans are fascists.
Oh, a new version, eh?
A new version, yes. I found out. Guess where I found out?
On Facebook.
Exactly.
Right.
Do you remember the time right after the Spanish Civil War that the fascists, right after the end of the Spanish Civil War, the Spanish fascists turned over the entire educational system to the Catholic Church?
Well, since I'm neither Spanish nor Catholic nor old enough to remember that particular war, no, I actually don't remember that.
That was my view. I was mostly focused on the not old enough because not old enough. But the next line was, well, what do the Republicans want to do now? ? And I'm not following this. The implication being that apparently the Republicans want to turn over our educational system to the Catholic Church?
Well, that's patently unconstitutional. They can't do that.
Well, first off, there has to be some evidence that the Republicans would want to turn over our entire educational system to any church at all, much less the Catholic Church, which seems rather unlikely for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not high on their list of churches that they would be willing to hand it off to.
Right.
I mean, like, that's slightly more likely than handing it over to the local synagogue. Oh, well, I guess more likely than handing it over to the Muslims, but that's about as likely as it happens to be.
Yeah.
So where's this coming from? Well, I finally figured out what's going on. It's a person who's pissing and moaning about the idea that maybe the Republicans are going to succeed in vouchers and letting the kids and their parents take this money and give it to the church's schools, and the kids will be able to take the public school's money and go to Catholic school with it. It'll be awful. And that's the same thing as the fascists turning over the entire school system to the Catholic Church.
And also, it's banning public school.
Something. You know, it's probably true.
They want to ban public schools.
Yeah, it's the Rethuglican. Well, you remember, there's got to be three big K's in Rethuglican party.
Yeah.
Wants to steal money from the nice, honest public school system run by decent, good, honest civil servants. Pause for effect there.
13 Detroit principals just arrested for fraud.
And use that money to pay religious schools to teach students. Yeah, so what? So letting a parent choose to send their child to a school run by a religious institution of any denomination that the parent chooses to these people is functionally equivalent to handing the entire school system over to the Pope. I think I grasp the actual principle here. The actual principle is everything inside the state, nothing outside the state. That's what this is really about.
Right. And, you know, eventually they're going to just say, oh, all these daycares? Yeah, we're going to take over those. Oh, and by the way, it's mandatory now. So, like, the state's going to take your kid at, like, 6 weeks.
Wait, you didn't notice?
What do you mean I didn't notice?
Universal pre-K? You have not heard this phrase?
Oh, no, I have heard that phrase. No, I'm talking about, like, daycare. Like,
yes.
Turning over your kid when they're six. Because I remember, so when I went to kindergarten, it was not put on by the state. I actually went to a church kindergarten.
Oh, and my kindergarten was run by the same people who ran first grade. It was the next building over.
Right.
And I had a preschool. The preschool was run by, if I remember correctly, it was a Baptist church. But it might have been an Episcopal church. I can't remember. But pre-K, universal pre-K. Oh, we need universal pre-K. And what is Head Start? Aside from a jobs program from failed teachers.
Yeah, it's...
universal pre-K.
Right. It's a pre-K program.
Right.
That they keep saying... well, I don't know if this was a national study, but I know they talked about it in Tennessee, where any of the good effects from the Head Start program are completely vanished by fourth grade.
Pretty much.
So as long as everybody is stopping at like a third grade education, Head Start's a good thing.
Exactly.
But once you progress onto the fourth grade, the only good thing it's there for is more teacher jobs and more time that the state gets to talk to your kid.
There's that, but keep in mind, it does keep a certain number of teachers off the streets.
That so is true.
They are not causing trouble on street corners.
And with Head Start, they're probably not sleeping with their students. Probably.
Probably not.
Probably not.
But given some of the headlines I've seen...
yeah, that's a thought that'll fester.
Yeah. I've noticed that there are a whole lot more teachers molesting student headlines than I've ever seen priest molesting student headlines. But there's a whole lot more priests molesting student jokes.
Well, now see, when a single priest molests a single boy, then that's a condemnation of the entire church. But when thousands of teachers molest their students, well, those are just isolated incidents.
True.
Mass isolated incidents.
Totally not related to each other.
Nope.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism could be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
and hate mail to wizardpc@gunscarstech.com.
If you're not already subscribed, subscribe in iTunes for all you Apple users.
Or in a Podcatcher app or Stitcher Radio if you're an Android user.
And make sure to help us grow by sharing this podcast with your friends.
Show notes can be found at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode85.
This is a URS production.